Welcome to Vespers. Some introductions. Tonight, service is assisted by Scott on the piano and Eric on the CD player. And Lars, who serves the village as teacher. And I'm Ken. I serve the village on the board, and I've also been here for 3 weeks in the media ministry. And I've had the great opportunity to listen in on some of Holden's history. I've been impressed with the great tradition that we come from. Heard the voices of individuals in this community standing up for peace, justice, and mercy in this world. But I also enjoy hearing the voices of Holden present as well as past. Our practice on Wednesday nights is to reflect on the written word, and during Lent, it's those texts that will be used during the Easter vigil. This evening, we're going to hear the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The reflections, though, are going to come from members of the Holden community in the past, some going back nearly 30 years. Let's sing first. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Melt me, mold me, fill me, and use me. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me.
Whose height was 60 cubits and whose width was 6 cubits. And he set it up on the plain of Dura, and he asked that all who saw it would bow down before it and worship. Whoever does not fall down and worship shall immediately be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. And therefore, as soon as all the people heard the sound of the horn and the pipe and the lyre, the trigon, the harp, the drum, and the entire musical ensemble, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden statue that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. But Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they would not bow down and worship. King Nebuchadnezzar called them in and said that if they would worship, things would be okay, but if not, they would immediately be thrown into a furnace of blazing fire. And who then is the God that will deliver you out of my hands? And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to present a defense to you in this matter. If our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the furnace of blazing fire and out of your hand, O king, let him deliver us. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, and we will not worship the golden statue that you have set up. This did not make King Nebuchadnezzar happy. He was so filled with rage against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that his face was distorted. He ordered the furnace heated up 7 times more than was customary. And he ordered some of the strongest guards in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to throw them into the furnace of blazing fire. And so they were bound, still wearing their tunics, their trousers, their hats, and their other garments. And they were thrown into the furnace of blazing fire. Because the king's command was urgent and the furnace was so overheated, the raging flames even killed the men who lifted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But the three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound into the furnace of blazing fire. But then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished, and he rose up quickly. He said to his counselors, "Wasn't it 3 men that we threw into the fire?" And they answered the king, "True, O king." And he replied, "But I see 4 men unbound walking in the middle of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the 4th has the appearance of a god." Nebuchadnezzar approached the door of the furnace of blazing fire and said, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here." And so they came out from the fire. And Nebuchadnezzar said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent this angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him. They disobeyed the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree. Any people, nation, or language that utters blasphemy against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, now showing King Nebuchadnezzar's good turn towards peace, shall be torn limb from limb, and their houses laid in ruins. For there is no other God who is able to deliver in this way." A story of standing up, even at great cost.
Picture of what was going on in this Old Testament story.
Yeah, did you see the picture in the story that it was like, you just see thousands and thousands of people almost in rows like Muslims at prayer, at the great, I'm not comparing them to the Babylonians, but I'm saying just to see thousands and thousands of rows bowing before this thing. And then 3 men standing there, refusing to bow. Does anybody want to join my confession? Has anybody here had a hard time going against the stream? And yet we're empowered by these stories and by the Spirit of God to say no. And also to discern with each other what no means and what is really the idolatry of our age. Well.
Empowerment to say no to the idolatries of our age.
This is a reading from Walter Brueggemann, who taught here in 1975 from something called Unmasking the Inevitable. A single conviction fuses all forms of protest. It could be otherwise. From slavery in ancient Egypt to genocide in Nazi Germany, from segregation in the United States to exploitation in Asian sweatshops, people have stood up and have said, "It could be otherwise." In the eyes of faith, Our own social situation is a replication of the ancient givens, the same uncomprehending ideologies, the same pain that goes unheeded, the same attentive, destabilizing God. The enactment of liturgy, the utterance of prophetic dissent, and the bodies put at risk are all of a piece. They reinforce each other, and together they insist it could be otherwise.
We often share the frustrations that Kyle expressed last night, but I'm only one. What can I do? Let's listen to a story that's told by John Schramm, who was a director at Holden Village, founder of two intentional communities, and who had focused his life on peace. He's been talking here about satyagraha, the truth power called nonviolence.
Germanicus was a monk who lived in Asia Minor about the year AD 400, and during his life the gladiatorial games were very popular. The gladiators were usually slaves or political prisoners who were condemned to fight each other unto death. For the amusement of the crowd, people were fascinated by the sight of spurting blood. Telemachus was very much disturbed that the Christian emperor, Honorius, sponsored these games and that so many people who called themselves Christians went to see them. What could be farther from the spirit of Christ than the horrible cruelty of the gladiatorial games? The church was opposed to the games, spoke out against them, but people did not listen. Then Telemachus realized that talking about this evil was not enough, and it was time to do something. What could one lone monk do against the whole Roman Empire? He was unknown. He had no power. The games had been entrenched in the Roman life for centuries. Nothing that he could possibly do would ever make a difference. He traveled to Rome. All the people were caught up in today's game, told him to come along. So he went along. He saw the emperor sitting over in the amphitheater. The gladiators came out into the center of the arena. Everybody was tense. Everybody was quiet. Now two strong young men drew their swords and the fight was on. One of them would probably die in a few minutes. Which one would it be? Then Telemachus rose from his seat and he ran into the arena. He held high a cross. He threw himself between the two combatants. In the name of our master, he cried, stop fighting. The two men hesitated. Nothing like this had ever happened before. They didn't know what to do. But the spectators were absolutely furious. Telemachus had robbed them of their anticipated entertainment. They yelled wildly, stampeded toward the center of the arena. They became a mob, and with sticks and stones, they beat Telemachus to death. Far down there in the arena lay a little battered body of a monk. But then the mob grew quiet, and there was a feeling of revulsion at what they had done. Emperor Honorius, rose and he left the Colosseum. The people followed him. The games for the day were over. Honorius moved of that day, and he took that opportunity to issue an edict. There has never been a gladiatorial game since. So it was in the year 404, one individual dared to say no, and gladiatorial games were over. That's my nomination of the saint for satyagraha, Telemachus. Don't forget. Thank you.
But we say, I'm not a Gandhi, and I'm not a Martin Luther King, and I'm not a 5th century monk. I'm just one Kyle. What can I do? Well, Larry Rasmussen helps us out with another story. Larry has taught here over a 25-year period from 1975 to 2000. Was a teaching staff coordinator here on more than one occasion, and currently holds the Reinhold Niebuhr Chair of Theology at Union Theological Seminary in New York. This is from his presentation on Noah and the Bomb.
Yes, I must tell you a marvelous story, the coal moth said. I sat on the branch of a fir, close to its trunk, when it began to snow, not heavily, not in a raging blizzard, no, just like in a dream, without any violence. Since I didn't have anything better to do, I counted the snowflakes settling on the twigs and needles of my branch. Their number was exactly 3,417,952. When the next snowflake dropped onto my branch, nothing more than nothing, you say, the branch broke off. Having said that, the coal mouse flew away. The doves, since Noah's time, an authority on the matter, thought about the story for a while and finally said to herself, perhaps there is only one person's voice lacking for peace to come about in the world.
The power of one for peace. We can bring this power of the few, of the one, closer to home. The mere 2% of the church that might be represented by Holden. We'll listen in on the end of a Bible study entitled Luke Destroys the Group Ego Identity, led by Carol Hinderly, who, along with Mary Hinderly, was the shaper of the Holden Village program and was its first director for the first 14 years. He's talking here about Holden. He makes a reference to Schutz, who was the president or bishop of the American Lutheran Church, who skipped an important church-wide meeting to attend the 10th anniversary dinner in Minneapolis. We listen in.
This could have been another LBI at a different level. It would have been ridiculous to have it. I felt some place in the church should appeal to that quality of mind and being that exists in all our parishes that does not get the kind of satisfaction input in the average local parish. When we traveled across the whole board, when we came to San Antonio, the whole American Lutheran Church changed direction. That fall was our 10th anniversary bank in Minneapolis. Schutz skipped the welcoming basket for Kent Knutson in order to be there, and some other bishops as well, simply because they wanted to honor what the village had done for the church. And I said, the turn which the American Lutheran Church made in San Antonio was made possible by Holden Village, and Schutz called out from his table, you bet it did, amen! See? Because this is where that kind of lady came together that could spring free from the old tradition, allow women to be ordained. You see? And that's God needs a place like this for that 2% too. But that 2% does the one thing I hope nobody's ever gone out of here feeling superior to the other 98% of parish. I don't think they ever have. I can tell John Shanley took over, I don't think we've ever heard of parish, and we felt this.
Finally, Dan Erlander again brings us a word of hope, reflecting on the story from Daniel and from the story of Lazarus.
Then the Lazarus story. And do you see the parallel here with the Lazarus story? What is the words that are called the men out of the furnace? Come out. And remember Jesus in the tomb of Lazarus, come out. And then when Lazarus comes out, he's all bound up with his grave clothes. And then Jesus calls the community, unbind him and bring him to me. And there Jesus paints the picture of a community of people who will unbind each other. And have you ever found how the forgiveness of sins between each other unbinds us and gives us liberation and freedom to live.
Dan goes on to say, let these stories call us out of our fiery furnaces. Let's sing once more.
Spirit of the living God, all afresh on me.
God's people. We are saved. We can risk anything. Go in peace. Serve the Lord.
Thanks be to God.